Buglers, we are live from Leicester Square Theatre on the 16th of September with Chris Addison and Alice Fraser. It might be our only London date of the year, so get your tickets now. Oh, get them at thebuglepodcast.com. That bit's important.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is a podcast from The Bugle.
Hello and welcome to Catharsis. I'm Tiff Stevenson, full-time comedian, part-time massively unqualified therapist. For this podcast only, each week I talk to a guest about small things that irritate them, pet peeves, old wounds that maybe need healing. We also dive into a topical gripe and a historical beef to see if we can provide some insight and mainly some catharsis. You can sweat the small stuff with me. This week I'm joined by comedian, podcaster and vintage enthusiast Rachel Fairbairn. And before we get into her gripes, as you all know, if you're regular listeners, I like to get into a little gripe of my own at the top of the show. And this week it's sky equity, or air real estate, air rights. Now, I've known about these for a while because it's how Trump made a lot of money in New York. When you own a building, it includes the right to use and build in the space above the land without interference from others. And it's a legal concept that's encoded in the Latin phrase, which I'm absolutely going to butcher. It's my modus operandi, incorrectly saying Latin phrases. Quisis est solum, ius est usque ad culium et ad inferos. I think somebody somewhere has probably just changed from a human into a horse, because it sounds like a spell. Translated, it means whoever owns the soil, it's theirs up to heaven and down to hell. What if you don't believe in hell? And how are there laws in this day and age based on hell being a reality rather than an abstract concept, you know? Or heaven. Watch the top of the skyscraper in case you hit the Philadelphia cheese angel while you're there. How far down is hell? Surely hell is like at Earth's core. Like someone else. So if you own a property, if you're owning it to the depths of hell, that's got to be to the Earth's core, to the magma. So like if I buy a house, I'm like, well, I want to own it to the magma. And then I'm going to build down there. And then what happens is you pop out the other side and there's some dude in Australia going, I'm trying to have a barbecue, mate. Like, I don't understand it. Like, it blows my mind that this exists. Also, that we're just like, I guess, like, years away from someone saying, I own that cubic foot of air and you're now breathing my air and you owe me money. Like, how is it possible that we can own something like a space above us?
I hate these like really archaic laws. You know, like when was it? Was it when the vaccine came out and everyone started quoting the Magna Carta?
Yes.
Like, it's something that you hadn't even thought about since school. Yeah. I just don't understand. Like, I just, and also I think hell, if it did exist, I think it would be not on this earth.
Right.
For that law to be accurate, you'd have to prove the existence of heaven and hell.
Exactly. This is, how can we have laws based in abstract concepts?
Yeah, you can't.
At the top of the show, we like to start with what we call an old grudge. So that is something from the past that you wish had gone differently, or that you'd had your say, or that you still hold on to. It could be from school, it could be from work, it could be from 6 months ago. So hit me, Rachel.
Okay, so this is hard for me because, maybe I'm the wrong guest for this, I don't bear grudges. And you'd think I would. I've got that vibe of somebody who's very much a grudge bearer, but I don't. I'm very good at going, fine, whatever, and then not speaking to somebody or just forgetting about something, moving on. But what something that does still bother me is jobs that I had in the past, because I left school at 16 and I went into the world of work. I had some really nice jobs, but the worst job I had was in a rare books library. And it wasn't I loved the building, I loved working with the books that we had, but there was one particular boss that I had and I hated them. And it wasn't a case of anything I'd done. They'd just taken a dislike to me to the point of that everybody else noticed. But it was such bizarre little things that they'd sort of... you know when someone tries to bully you? And I've never been bullied. I was never bullied at school and I've never bullied anybody. And I certainly won't allow myself to be bullied as an adult. But it was just very bizarre. It's like this sort of middle-aged woman when I was sort of in my sort of late 20s who used to just pick up on things and, like, you know, call me up to her office all the time and stuff like that. And I'd just be like... I can't get my head around this. And then, of course, as you leave the job, I mean, I remember my leaving due. She came on my leaving due and I was thinking, why are you here? And she bought me a drink and I was like, I'd rather drink the devil's piss than drink that. I'm not taking a drink off you. So I just said, oh, I'm ever so sorry. I can't accept a drink off you. And she was like, oh, I didn't even realise you were leaving today. I was like, why would you? You know, just everything about this woman... was awful, and I, to the point of it doesn't make me angry or anything. It just makes me baffled when I look back on it. I think, what was so bad in your life that you had to focus on me in some way to
go for me and make my life hell? I like that you were principled enough to not accept the drink. I like that was your line.
Not.
I like that was your line. You were like, I will not take a beverage from you, lady.
No, can't. I tell you what, like, that's something else that I used to, if I, you know, working with people, the people that you sort of disliked, and it was very much sort of that kind of building and vibe of people bringing stuff that they'd made, cakes and stuff like that. And if I didn't like somebody, I'm like, I can't eat cakes off you. I can't eat any food that you've made.
I'm not going to have your brownies, Susan.
I don't want this shit. You know, I just would be like, no, thank you. And I don't know how people can... If they don't like somebody or, you know, they've got some sort of friction with somebody, I don't understand how they can then engage with them on certain levels or accept things off them. I'm like, no, it's a boundary that's up. We don't interact in any way. I'm certainly not going to eat your food.
I'm wondering if I would. I wonder if I'd be like choking down some kind of sponge cake out of politeness. Like, I don't know what to do. But what's interesting about how you've described it is... it's one of those really, really annoying, and I get that you don't harbour grudges. And I think, actually, as a rule, that's a good way to be in life, because it can really drag you down when you're wearing the weight of, like, 1,000 different petty annoyances or injustices. Sometimes perceived injustices, sometimes actual injustices. And it can be quite hard to move forward when you've got, like, a lot of these... sort of on there. But every now and then I remember things that people have done that have irritated me. And what's interesting about your story is it's quite hard to get other people to understand when someone does it, when it's a series of small slights. Small slights, yes. Like little negs, little like jabs, you know, that you're like, so you tell a person one, they're like, well, maybe they meant this. Maybe they didn't mean it that way.
Yeah,
and then
you go,
no, you have to build, you have to look at the whole picture. And when you look at the whole picture, you go, this person's a fucking asshole. That's what this is. Now I'm looking at the whole picture. I can see something that I don't like. But you feel mad because you feel like you're keeping a ledger of like little, and you're like, surely I've got better things to do. But now it's like the third or fourth time I'm beginning to see a pattern here.
Yes, exactly. And but also I was quite baffled by the whole thing, because even though I liked the job, I didn't care enough about the job because it wasn't well paid. It wasn't a particularly good job. And also it was a job that I had to, but I was doing stand up in the evening. You know, that was my job to pay my bills. But the thing I wanted to do was in the evening. So I was just kind of like, I do my job. I don't understand why you want to create an atmosphere. And I noticed, like, there was a very much of an upstairs-downstairs culture in there, And my theory on this is because it was a neo-Gothic building, it was a very grand building, I think that got in people's heads. And if you had a nice office, I think it made people feel like they were powerful. So if you worked on the on the modern reception, they were like, oh, you peasants, you know. And I think it did psychologically affect people. But I just got to the point where I was like, I started to see her in a totally different way. Like, I started to see it as, you know, when you're a kid and you see, you put your mum's high heel shoes on and sort of walk about in them and, like, put a little handbag on your arm. And that's how I started to see her, like, oh, you're pretending, you're playing at being a boss. You're pretending to be a grown-up, and this is how you think
grown-ups act. Yes. And also taking your little bit of power. Some people are dangerous with power, and often, you know, not to give her necessarily credit that we feel like she deserves, but often when someone behaves like that, where they're trying to grab a little bit of power, they feel fairly powerless in their life in lots of other ways. So they're like, this is the one place that I actually get to do a thing and I get to make the rules I get to. And that's actually just quite tragic. But also, did she turn up at any of your gigs if you were doing stand-up at the time?
No.
Because that would have been a power play. That really would have been a power play.
I remember she sent me an email once and she was like, I think your activities in stand-up comedy outside of work are interfering with your job here. Which, let me tell you what my job there was, to wander around, make sure no one was nicking anything, show people books that they wanted to see, and make sure the building was clicked. Like, and I sort of sent her a message back and I was like, well, can you give me some examples? Because I think what you're saying is actually erroneous, which is great when you get to use a word like that, innit? And no email came back. No email came back. So I think, I don't know, she'd never been to any of my gigs, never, which, I mean, she had no fucking sense of humour, so I don't think comedy was a bag. There was no sort of sensible attitude around lives, you know, like, if somebody had a dentist appointment, it'd be, oh, well, you make the time back. And like, just let someone go out with a dentist, you know, or go to the doctors, or just be a bit malleable, because life's not as straightforward as, you know, it's that kind of just that oppressive atmosphere of
no flexibility
whatsoever.
But also, that is, especially if someone's on the shop floor, you don't want them with a cold sneezing over people. If their teeth are bad, let them go to the dentist, because they're there representing. I do like to imagine that you walked around stroking the spines going, rare. That's what I imagine.
All the time, yeah.
In a really sexy fashion. I like to think that's what goes on in a rare book.
It's ever so rare. Oh, it's ever so old and rare. There's only one of these.
Where was it published? I'll never tell. I don't know why I'm trying to make it sexy. But I feel like this person, we've all met in the workplace, unfortunately. Mm. And I definitely did early on. And I met a few of these. And my upshot was, on the other side, I was a bit like, this is a bit tragic, because this is as big as your life's going to get.
Mm.
And this is as exciting as. So I felt very, what's the word I'm looking for there? Like, almost like, that sounds like so full of myself. But what's the other option is you blow up at them at work and then you get fired, or you just move on and do better with your life and leave them in.
Exactly.
Thank you for sharing your old grudge. I've enjoyed that. And I'm thinking about her. I wonder if she's still there. If you're listening, sort your shit out.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The next section of the podcast we call a topical cream, which is where we discuss a stingy news story and try and help heal it. And it can be anything. It doesn't even have to be within the last week. It could be within the last 6 months. But something that's out there, that's happening in the world, that's got you a little bit like, argh!
Okay. It's the cost of living crisis and the way that things are reported. I fuck it. Like when, who was it in the government the other day? I sound very inarticulate then. The woman who was saying, oh, basically the upshot of what she was saying was, oh, work harder,
right,
do more hours. I'm just sick of it. And I hate things like, oh, here's, like on the BBC website, oh, cheap recipes to feed 12 people and it's a fucking carrot and a turnip boiled, you know? I hate it. I hate the way that, sort of the way things are at the moment, because, you know, there's a cost of living crisis, everyone's skint, energy bills are going up, people are fucked, people are on their asses, you know, and it's affecting pretty much everybody.
Yes.
And it's just this thing of, oh, well, why don't you buy this, but free, like, people are quite, it's this attitude of, well, you will live in poverty in this rich country. I hate this attitude.
I sort of talked about this very, like, a while back on Twitter, and I had people going, well, we're not one of the richest nations. And I'm like, we are. Just the distribution of it is very, very unequal. And there was this attitude, I described it as, like, why should we be living in the pages of a Samuel Pepys diary? Like, why is it okay for that to... And like you say, it affects every... It's not just at the bottom. It's at the bottom, in the middle. It's in the middle upper. The only ones it's not really affecting are like the top 1%, you know.
Exactly,
the 1%ers. They're the ones not being affected by this. It was Therese Coffee, I think, is the person.
That's who it was, yeah.
So just work a bit harder. It's the Kardashian attitude of like, people don't work. And you're like, sure, Kim. Because you seem to work really hard.
Yeah.
but like Therese Coffey and Kim Kardashian, they have so much in common. It's the idea that somehow it's our fault that we are being charged more than any other country in Europe for our energy bills. And these people that appear whenever you talk about it to discuss it, that kind of go, you don't know hard, you know.
Like back in my day, Uncle Charlie had lumps of wood for teeth. You never heard him complain. These sort of people, you know, like, oh, we shared one square of chocolate between 9 of us.
It's the fetishization of it.
That's
I
the
hate
word.
It.
That's the perfect and it, word.
It's like, this is not normal. This is like, I follow this account on Twitter. I've become a bit obsessed with it. And it's called something like Golden Memories and Silver Tears or something. And it started off as quite a thing of like, oh, do you remember this? Do you remember that? And now it's become an insanity. I'm like, how old is the person running this? Because I don't think they remember any of this. And then it was like, there was a picture of just coats on a bed the other day and it said, remember when it was so cold you had to put coats on the bed? It's like, yeah, that's not a happy memory. That's not a nice thing to remember. Why, you know, the people are doing that now, this is not something, not like, oh, do you remember when we're all really cold? I remember like when I was...
Sorry,
very,
when you
small.
Said that, coats on the bed, I automatically thought, do you remember when you used to go to a house party and everyone would shove their coats?
Oh, no, no. Not fun coats on the bed. Coats on the bed to get you warm.
Getting off with someone underneath a pile of coats on the bed.
But I remember being like, one of my earliest memories was being like about 3 years old and getting up in the morning but to go to nursery, but getting dressed in bed because it was cold, you know, and just being cold. I don't think anyone should have to be cold. And it's just this weird sort of, oh, well, if you can't afford this, oh, buy 3 potatoes and freeze them and then have half a one on a Wednesday. I cannot, like, I just do not understand why everyone's so happy to just go, okay.
Oh, the healthy eating initiative by the government, this was a while ago. It's always this idea that people think they can budget better than people who have to budget. And I've often said before, you should make like single mums do the budget each year, not the Chancellor, because they know how to stretch.
Yeah.
So there's this healthy eating, like, no more junk food. And I was like, yeah, but healthy food is, like, actually really expensive. It's quite hard to eat with, like, to get hold of fresh ingredients to make these healthy dishes you're talking about. And that's when what I called these spag bowl dads appeared on Twitter. I called them the spag bowl dads because all of these men came back, and it was all men with a recipe for, like, you can make spaghetti bolognese, and then, like, using, like a Dolmio bolognese sauce that I was like, oh, but you know, this has got loads of sugar and salt in it. Like, it's the anti. And also, it's not as cheap as you're like, you can get an onion for 5p. And you're like, in what world are you buying an onion for 5p, mate? Like, it would cost you more than that to grow one in an allotment, right? Like, what, how are you thinking that it's possible to do this? So people like to go, I know how to do that, or I know how to. People just need to be, you know, maybe cut back on some luxuries. Why have you got a nice phone or a TV? You know, I think that's forever been this thing of, like, why are people in council houses? Why have they got televisions?
Yeah, exactly. It's this thing of, like, you just don't believe that anyone could be is allowed a luxury, you know? What it's like, you should just have a miserable existence. You should be eating scraps for your breakfast, dinner and tea, and you should be going to bed cold. And I just don't... It's like that old thing of, like, yeah, cigarettes are expensive, but it's like, oh, they're all smoking. Because what a fucking miserable time they're having. Yes. Let them have something for them, you know? Yeah. Does it matter?
So when you see homeless people and you go, well, they're going to spend that money on drugs and booze, and you're like, I would.
Yeah, well, yeah, fucking...
If I was on the street, what do you think I would be doing this sober? Like, what are you on about?
You know, just some little luxury in someone's fucking life. Just let them have something, you know? I just... Yes. It's this thing of, like, this wanting poor people to be Dickensian, you know, Cratchits. But they don't just want them to be poor and cold. They want them to be grateful for anything that you might be able to throw them as well. I just hate the whole scenario. We shouldn't, you know, in a normal society, you shouldn't want people to be, you know, scrabbling round trying to find an onion for 5p. This is not normal behaviour. You should be thinking, instead of going, well, you can do that, you should be saying, why should anyone be doing that?
Yes. Yeah. Why should people who are in full-time jobs be using food banks?
Absolutely. Why do we have food banks in the first place? Yeah. And don't get me started on that, because there's a food bank on my street, and every Saturday people turn up to use this food bank, more people than is acceptable. But this is something I don't understand. It's at a community centre, and the queue for the food bank is always up the street. Why are you making people queue outside? There's a sports hall. Fucking let the people in. To give people
it's like
some
you parade
form,
them.
Yeah, give people some form of fucking dignity, you know? It really fucking annoys me. Really bugs me.
Yeah, you're not letting people have any, you know, it's like a statement, isn't it? I'm standing in this queue, therefore there's going to be a judgment of me and the fact that I need this. And I already feel horrific because I need this.
Yeah.
Because I need this help, because... You know, as we all know, when times are hard, it's very difficult to even acknowledge that it can be hard, acknowledge that you need help. So the idea that you must then... And also, I will say this, poor people are the ones that are often made to feel bad about other poor people. How it often plays out is, I was at the airport in Glasgow, and next to the EasyJet check-in was a huge charity desk that had been set up for donations. And I was like, do you know what this isn't in? The business lounge. It's right next to the EasyJet check-in, because they know that often people who are broken hard up are the first to donate or try and help out. Or they're made to feel pressure that they should be doing that. And then the people who actually have money, who are in the business lounge, are left alone. So it's other poor people who are made to feel bad about poor people. And also, because the airport is the last place anyone feels altruistic. Mm. Like, you're like, yeah, I've just weighed my... If you're getting on an EasyJet flight, you're like so stressed out anyway. And like, I was like, this is such a bad idea. But I was fascinated by the fact that it wasn't done in the business lounge.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it's, you know, solve your own problems. Oh, you know, if your skin... Oh, but there's people more skin than you are. You should be helping those people. Yeah, I just hate it, you know. And also, I do get tired of middle-class altruism as well. That's something that really annoys me, where it's... If you want to help people, do it. You don't have to fucking tell everybody on social media, you know?
Yes. Don't be performative with it. Yes. Just do the good things. Don't tell us all about it.
Because absolutely.
Then it becomes about you. It isn't about you really wanting to help. It's about everyone seeing you as a good person.
And what are you hiding? That's what I always think with some people. When they do it too often, I'm like, what are you hiding? You know, don't make me think of Jimmy Savile. What are you up to? You know? Look
too
over there. Charity. Don't look at me. Yeah, look over there. Don't look at me. That's the thing. Yeah. I'm just very suspicious.
We see you.
Yeah.
We see you. We see you. Now, this section of the podcast can get spicy because it's time for an unpopular opinion. So that is something that you love that everyone else hates, or vice versa.
Okay. I was thinking about this and I'm not interested in films. I've seen films that I've seen now, and I will just rewatch those ones now. I do not want to hear recommendations. I don't want, when my boyfriend says, oh, I really like, think you should, you'd enjoy this. I'm like, nope. I don't want to know. I am happy as I am.
No new films then?
No new films. The thing is as well, I'm more of a reader than I am a watcher. And I find that if I am watching anything now, I have to have subtitles on. So like, my boyfriend always says to me, oh, why have you got subtitles on? You know, after he's just been careering through the house, singing, making noise, fucking banging pans, you know, whistling while he's putting the kettle on. You're why I've got subtitles on. But I, to engage with something properly, I have to be able to read along with it. And I just, I've got a very poor attention span unless I'm physically reading something. I just am not interested in, you know, I don't want to hear people talking about films. You're a film person though, aren't you?
Well, it's so weird that you say this because it was just last night I was going through some old films that I love and thinking we really had peak cinema and I just don't know that it's going to get back to... I put Mars Attacks in the list to watch again. And I was like, look at the stellar cast in this. You know, it's got Glenn Close and it's got Jack Nicholson. It's got Danny DeVito. It's got Sarah Jessica Parker and Pierce Brosnan. Mm. You know, like this caliber of... And I was sort of thinking almost the opposite. I was like, I think I'm past peak TV. Like, I do want to see really good movies again. Mm. But it feels like there's a lot more character driven, which is also great, and arty stuff out there, but like films like that, like Independence Day, you know, those big like event
the blockbusters
cinema.
the
blockbusters that you were like, oh, which felt like it came back a bit with Top Gun Maverick, but I would love to see the return of that kind of film. But like you say, I've got all of my favorite films are still ones from that period in my life where it was the defining, you know, it was stuff like Terminator 2. It was stuff like Goodfellas. It was stuff like Point Break. That era of film for me is like, it provides everything that I want. And now I feel I'm just watching rehashed versions of not so good stuff.
I mean, I love horror films. That's one thing. I will watch horror films. That's pretty much all I watch. That was it. The film As Good As It Gets was on TV the other day. And my mum was watching it. And I said, I couldn't watch anything like this. And she said, yeah, because no one's getting injured or no one's frightened. I was like, yeah, that's why I can't watch it. But I will happily watch a bad film. Oh, TV movie in the afternoon that's shit. Love it. Cannot get enough of that kind of stuff because it makes me laugh. And I think, I don't know, I find it quite charming that something's so bad and I enjoy that. You know, I don't have to think about anything. And then I'll watch like a TV show or a film from the 70s or the early 80s. Say, for example, if my boyfriend Tim sits me down and he goes, oh, I'd really like you to watch Dead Man's Shoes. I'm like, I can't imagine anything fucking worse, mate. I don't want to watch it. I just don't care, you know? I've not been to the cinema for ages. Like, if there's a horror film out, I'll usually try and go to the cinema to go and watch it. But
I do love horror. So I'm the same as you. I love horror and I will go to a horror film in the same way that my husband, who is, you know, a director, so obviously we both love film, But it just takes a lot, like, it takes a lot more now, I think, to impress me in terms of film. Like, I loved Everything Everywhere All at Once. That blew me away. So it, but it has to be something quite big, I guess, to now make me feel like we had this such a great cinema era in the 90s. But then again, that could just be because it was my coming of age sort of period. Yeah. But I do like watching new films that come out. I'm eager and keen for them. And I like the vintage TV stuff as well. But I find that I do have my favourites that I could just re-watch. Have you got those? Like, what's the ones that you like?
Oh, Jurassic Park. I remember that was the film I went to see. It was pictures, like, I went about 10, 15 times when it was out. Love it. Still love it now. An American Werewolf in London. Love that film. Probably my favourite. School for Scoundrels, which is the old 1960s, 50s, 60s one with Alistair Sim and Terry Thomas in it. Love that
film.
An
Ealing comedy.
Is it Ealing?
I always think of those Alistair Sims ones as
yes, like St. Trinian's and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Here's maybe what we're noticing, or both of us, about a lot of modern films, is it feels like there's less of this kind of very, very specific auteur. And you're coming through in the Steven Spielberg sort of era and the Scorsese and all of those, you know, even Catherine Bigelow with like Point Break, that era of directors where their work felt so very specific. And a lot of stuff now is made. A friend of mine told me about this concept, and as an actor, I was like, that just makes me want to curl up and die. That he had a meeting for a film and the director went, yeah, this is a one-eye project. And he was like, what? He was like, yeah, it's like a one, we call them a one-eye film, which is where you kind of watch it, but you're also just sort of scrolling through your phone at the same time.
Oh my God, that's not the point. Don't make it then.
Don't make it, but that is how so many films these days are kind of, like, sometimes you watch something and you go, there's all this exposition in the first 5 minutes and then there's just like chunks of stuff happening and you're like, this isn't really adding to the story. It's not really going anywhere. And then you're like, oh, it's because people are like, scroll, scroll, scroll.
Oh God, no, I hate that. You know, I hate that.
If a film can't keep your attention and then you're like, oh, I'm going to, you know, when I get into the cinema, I switch my phone off anyway. So I'm I find it quite easy to sort of suspend my disbelief. So it's quite difficult to take me out of it. But that just felt to me like there's less of that, you know, now there's more people involved in the process, maybe. There's less latitude given to directors and, you know, it could sometimes be about property. I guess is why Scorsese came out and said, you know, there's too many superhero films and not enough stories, you know, that directors are not necessarily given that same, you know, there's a committee of people who are like, we're going to make this film and someone wants to make it like this and someone wants to make it like that. And there's lack of authorship. I could be completely wrong, but that's kind of, I think that's a real thing at the moment.
Yeah. And I agree. There are too many superhero films. I mean, I'm not even interested. I mean, I'm glad people enjoy them, but, you know, grow up. I just... I hate to say this, I just find it when adult men are really into... I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm glad that... maybe it's my ick. There you go. Maybe that's my ick.
Your ick, yes, yeah.
Oh, you just turned 40 and you like Iron Man. That's nice.
And I think the authorship can happen in horror films as well, by the way. That is I was thinking there about Ari Aster, who did Hereditary and Midsommar, you know. So you can see when it's in horror as a genre, which has like, I love horror and it's kind of boomed again, you know, in the last sort of 5 to 10 years, I think, has been like a real resurgence. And especially of films that you think they are the horror, but there's also a social horror or an underlying something else going on within it that tells us about the world. And I think that's why horror is an exciting genre at the moment. And it doesn't really get recognised much at any of these awards ceremonies and stuff like that.
No, it doesn't really. Hereditary was probably the last film I remember going to the cinema to see where there was an audible from the entire cinema. And you know which bit?
I know the bit, And do you know what they did that was so clever? The trailer, if you saw the trailer to that film And I think more films need to do this because too many films give away what the yes. film is going to be about and put all the best bits in the trailer. The trailer for that so specifically led you down the path of thinking one thing and what the film was going to be about and then pulls the rug from underneath completely without any spoilers. I think it's fair to say I think that was very clever.
It was. I really enjoyed it, but that bit when, I mean, it was a really packed cinema as well. So when everyone had the same reaction, but then what was quite funny was that relief because then everyone started laughing. Like, oh my God, that was horrible. Ha 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 ha, wasn't it? yeah, one of the top horror moments, I think that.
Thank you for sharing your unpopular opinion. I sort of agree with it. So that's always fun. This is the section of the podcast we call Aurochs, which is a prehistoric form of cattle, which was our way of saying historical beef. How else are we going to say good. Historical like beef? And as you're on the podcast this week, mm-hmm. Rachel, I thought you might have something to say about this. It's Blur. It's one of the all-time great feuds, Blur versus Oasis. Now, you might already be like, actually, it's Oasis versus Blur.
Nah. I'm gonna put the
but 27, is it 27 years ago now?
Fucking hell. Unbelievable.
28 years ago that the Britpop Wars hotted up. The Battle of Britpop. Whose side were you on? August 1995. Team Oasis or Team Blur?
I am a huge Oasis fan. I mean, to the point of embarrassing. I think about Oasis every single day. I talk about them every single day. I call them Liam and Noel as if I know them, right? I am a bore about Oasis. I got into Oasis when I was 12. They've been more part of my life more than they've not, and I absolutely adore them. But I also like Blur. So I love Britpop. I was about 12, 13 when it was all going on, and I loved it. Absolutely loved it. Loved Pulp. I even like Menswear, but we don't talk about that anymore. So it was Country House and Roll With It that were released on the same day, clearly engineered by record companies to get a bit of excitement going. And Blur's Country House actually got to number one. I actually bought both of those singles. So I didn't pick one to buy because I just liked both bands, but I preferred Oasis. I also made a game at school in craft design and technology. It was Blur v Oasis. That was my game that I made for my project. It was that kind of thing. But when you think back, it's a class thing, isn't it? They put the working class boys against the art school boys, didn't they? And yes. Unfortunately, the art school boys won, which was a bit of a shame. But it's so pathetic because when you read back, like Damon Albarn said, oh, it was like the school bullies, Oasis with the school bullies. Oh, fuck off, Damon. Shut up. Grow up,
well,
mate.
Especially as I think didn't Blur move the release date of Country House to the same day.
So the first
blow in this feud or the first bit of the beef was actually started by Blur. So you can't accuse the others of bullying when you're the ones coming in going, no, we're going to release ours the same day. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
You're the one coming out all Charlie Big Potatoes and and saying, you know, we're gonna go up against you. And yeah, like you say, the press, I think, had an absolute field day on this of just like presenting working class, no nonsense Northerner versus hipster pretension and, you know, and same as you, I really liked both and I really liked Pulp as well.
Yes.
And I often wonder sometimes when we talk about rivalries on this, I'm like, is the net effect that it makes both of them better in their work or is it a distraction from the work?
To be honest, I just think it was a bit of fun at the time, wasn't it? It was just a bit of fun that was probably about 10 days of people's
warfare, Rachel.
Just 10 days. It's a bit of fun. I actually went to see Oasis was the first band that I went to see in Manchester in 1995. And I went to see Blur the week after. So I, you know, what a great time that was. It was just a bit of fun, wasn't it? I think Damon Albarn kind of took it a bit too seriously. I think he took the whole Oasis thing a little bit too serious. I think he was quite intimidated by these northern working class men, but I think deep down he really wanted to be friends with them. Because it was weird, because Liam and Noel and the rest of Oasis at the time actually got on with the other members of Blur. You know, they got on with, I don't necessarily think Alex James, I think...
Coxon, did they get on with Coxon?
They got on with Graham Coxon and they got on with Dave Rowntree, the drummer. But Graham Coxon seems to be quite a popular person with most people. He seems quite a popular guy. But I think Damon Albarn has probably never come into contact with anyone like Oasis in his life, and I think he was quite intimidated by them. I mean, what is both his parents were art teachers, I think, weren't they? And he was at an art college in Colchester, that kind of thing. I can't listen to Damon Albarn now, though, mainly because I don't like his musical output. But when he sings, he whistles his S's, and it, I don't know if my hearing's changed as I've got older, but that's all I can hear.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I can't deal with it.
That suggests, like, that he's had teeth removed or replaced or something's happened. I need to have a listen to see if I can get that. What I kind of like about it is you're not going to forget it. And it's part of the bluster of rock and roll, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and you could argue that the Oasis felt rock and roll and Blur felt like a band.
Yes.
Even though there was, like, you know, there's heavy guitar and there's rock, you know. I really felt like at the time Oasis embodied, apparently it sort of started, they were quite respectful to each other. And then after...
did Liam say something about... Yeah, he said something about Justine Frischmann from Elastica, didn't he?
Oh.
He said, I think he said that he fancied her and she was going out with Damon Albarn at the time.
Yes.
I think there was something.
Oh, God, so much interpersonal. This was our era. It's like, you know, in the 70s, they had Fleetwood Mac doing this. It's like kind of rumours level. And I'd forgotten about Justine.
Yeah, Justine.
Apparently, he walked up to Albarn at a party. Liam. Of course, it's Liam. like, because Noel was a bit more, like, choosy about when he dropped his bombs, whereas Liam was like, I'm going to do him right now. And apparently, some might say was number one. So Albarn went to Oasis celebration party to say, well done. Liam came over and goes, number fucking one, right in my face. so I thought, okay, we'll see. But I kind of like that. I kind of think that's someone riding high and going, you know, he's at their party.
Yeah.
Like, what does he think was going to happen? That they were going to, they were going to concede graciously and be like, well, we didn't expect this, but so exciting. He's like, no, number fucking one. You know,
yeah, exactly. A bunch of working class lads from Manchester. I mean, what, at the time, Liam's, what, 24 years old, something like that? He's having a great time. He's a singer in a band, the number one. What do you want him to do? Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about the sort of how much of it was engineered, probably specifically by the record companies, to make the most. But it sold magazines, it sold records.
Yeah.
Well, not even records, CDs.
CDs, yeah.
Compact discs. I wasn't aware how much you were a fan of Blur as well, so that's kind of interesting to me.
Yeah.
That you were like, oh no, I'm buying both of them. So you didn't buy... I wonder how many fans actually bought into the, like, getting angry. Because I'm sure there are some Oasis fans who are like, still rage at Robbie Williams to this day.
Oh, that's a sad little sort of tiff, isn't it? Because, again, Robbie Williams, he just wanted to be friends with them, didn't he? And they were just like, no, I don't think so, mate. And then, obviously, Robbie went out with Nicole Appleton. And then Liam sort of was like, well, married her, didn't he?
Yes.
So there's all that kind of stuff.
It's like everyone... All Saints sort of in the mix. Meg Matthews, the early Meg Matthews. Patsy Kensit, my producer, has just sort of come
Patsy.
On to say. Yeah, I've got Patsy Kensit.
Yeah.
They were busy lads. Busy lads.
Although I do think Liam very much is the kind of man that if he meets a woman and she says, we're together now, he goes, all right. I don't think he... I just think he's... Right, okay. I think he's very much like... Noel is getting divorced. That's something that... You know, I can't believe he's getting divorced from his wife now. I'm shocked by that. Genuinely shocked.
So all you need to do is meet Liam then and go,
oh, I've met Liam.
We're together. Oh, you have met him?
Yeah, I've met him. Yeah, he's very nice. I gave him a kiss on the cheek. I mean, to be honest, I can't imagine anything worse than being married to one of them. Not for me. Not for me.
At arm's length. Enjoying the music.
I like the music. Well, that's the thing, you know. Imagine, I always think about people like, you know, fans that then marry the person they're a fan of. You can't enjoy the music anymore.
No, you know? Because you know the person.
Yeah. I'd rather have the music. Keep the music.
You've been in the bathroom after they've had a shit.
Yeah, like, don't. Yeah.
This is ruined definitely maybe
yeah,
for me.
Yeah, you do not. I don't even want to think about it. Just keep them. Keep them as they are. Yeah.
Thank you for chatting about our historical beef today. And before we wrap up, I always like to ask our guests if they have anything to plug. So tell us what you're up to and where we can see you and what you're doing.
Oh, well, what am I up to? I've got a podcast called Ghoul Guide that's out now on all platforms. It's where I visit haunted locations around the UK and see if there's any ghosts.
Oh, yes. Do listen to that. Do listen to Ghoul Guide. That's great. All Killer.
Oh, All Killer No Filler, a podcast that I do with Kira Pritchard-McLean about serial killers. That's out, and that's been out for 9 fucking years. So if you're not listening, there's plenty to catch up on. That's it, really. Just gigging, and then I think I might have a tour in September, but we'll see, you know.
But if they want to see you live, what they can do is go to your Instagram and Twitter.
Instagram, Twitter, just get on there. I've got a link tree. You know what you're doing.
Go check out the link tree and then you can find out about last minute gigs and all of that kind of stuff. I am also on tour. Go to tiffstevenson.co.uk because I've finally updated my website with tour dates. Not the pictures. There's still a photo of me on a stool in a flowery dress looking like I'm in a yoghurt advert. apart from that, all of the dates are listed there. So come out and see me on tour. Thank you for joining us, Rachel.
Pleasure. I've enjoyed myself.
You can listen to other programmes from The Bugle, including The Bugle, Catharsis, Tiny Revolutions, Top Stories and The Gargle, wherever you find your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.